This is Audible.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Random House Audio presents Star Wars Maul Lockdown by Joe Schreiber. Read for you by Jonathan Davis. One, Cog Hive 7.
The first punch came at Maul sideways, spinning his upper body around with the sheer force of the impact and driving him back a half step before he fully recovered his equilibrium. Somewhere under his feet, the alloy plates of the cell's floor seemed to shiver and quake, threatening to give way. He spat out a tooth and wiped away the blood. The creature in front of him was a walking trophy case of previous kills. 2.5 meters high, its massive shoulders and upper torso encased in jagged plates of primitive armor that clearly had once served as the jawbone and carapace of a much larger predator, it seemed to occupy an entire corner of the prison cell. Maul stared at the thing. The gray slope of its face was a surgeon's nightmare of ritualistic scars, metal rings and studs, wire loops and hooks, with bluish sacs pulsating beneath its eyes, all of it siphoning down and inward toward a gaping, razor-toothed mouth. Even its arms seemed to have been plucked from two different organisms. The right hand was a blunt-knuckled fist, the left, an elongated spider-fingered claw. Together they formed a mallet and blade, one made for pounding, the other for slashing. It was the right that had come careening out of nowhere just seconds before, slamming Maul backward and knocking out one of his teeth. The thing reached down and picked up Maul's incisor from the floor of the cell. Straightening up, it shoved the tooth into an empty space in its own mouth, twisting it until it lodged in place. Then it grinned at Maul, as if asking how he liked the sight of one of his teeth in its mouth, another trophy for its collection. Maul gazed back at it. And then the rage came. And the rage was good. The uniform they'd given him was a standard orange jumpsuit, whose heavy fabric cut off movement in most directions. Maul heard its seams ripping as he sprang at his opponent, closing the half-meter gap between them in less than a second. The thing responded exactly as he'd hoped, lunging up eagerly to meet his advance. Its mismatched arms pinwheeled wildly before it, swinging and clawing through the stale gray air of the cell, its voice screeching at him in a guttural, choking language he'd never heard before.
"Let those be your dying words," Maul thought. "Right here. Today."
Close enough now that he could smell the corpse stink pouring off it like rotten meat, he fell into a reflexive series of moves. Both hands shot out and grabbed the creature by its throat, hoisting it up over his head and squeezing until he felt the deep tendons of its neck beginning to give and weaken in his grip. There was a wet, muffled click from somewhere inside the thing's chest, and a sudden glut of warm, thick, sticky fluid began spurting up from its throat. Blood. Jet black. The sight of it gave Maul no satisfaction. Only the vaguely annoying realization that it never should have taken him this long to turn the battle to his advantage. Still, ending his opponent's life quickly would restore a certain necessary balance to the encounter, if not honor, at least vindication. He tightened his grip, and the screaming sound got louder, becoming a broken, bird-like squawk. More blood leapt up, inky black and viscous and started pouring from its mouth and eye sockets.
Enough.
Executing a perfectly balanced spin, Maul swung the creature around and slammed it to the floor with a sharp clang, connecting hard enough that he felt the steel plates reverberate under his feet. The thing's head drooped on its broken neck, lolling sideways to expose the throbbing vessels beneath its gray flesh. Only now did Maul allow himself to exhale. As anticipated, he hadn't needed his lightsaber staff or the Force to dispatch this waste of flesh. Not that either was really an option. Staring down into the thing's face, he raised his foot and planted his heel in the exposed throat, ready to pulverize the trachea, or whatever the thing used for an airway, with one decisive stomp. For an instant, he met its sagging, inarticulate eyes.
Now,
he instructed the thing, which seemed to be realizing that it was destined to finish out the final pathetic seconds of its life here in nameless obscurity.
Die.
All at once, with blinding speed, the creature yanked loose and burst upright, reaching behind its back to produce what appeared to be a long bow staff. As the staff blurred toward him, Maul realized that the weapon, which he'd first taken to be a piece of wood or some kind of biomechanical hybrid, was actually a living organism. A serpent whose head lashed out at lightning velocity, latching onto his face, slashing at his eyes. Maul recoiled, but it was too late. With a jolt, his vision was gone, burying him in instant darkness. This was the second time in as many seconds that the thing had caught him off guard. And now he knew why. The creature was somehow cut off from the Force, utterly detached from the deep field of heightened sensitivity from which he was constantly drawing information about his surroundings. The intuitive sensory abilities that he took for granted in any normal battle were simply not there. An acidic heaviness took hold of his optic nerves like a slow drip, seeping in, sinking deep. And he realized that he could already feel the poison taking control, spreading out in concentric layers of numbness through the muscle and tissue of his face. Now the thing's shrieking laughter was everywhere. Willful, triumphant.
You must end this now.
Maul straightened. The voice in his head was his own, an austere evocation of his own training. But the cadence was unmistakably his master's. An echo of pitiless instruction, hours, days, years of unyielding pain and discipline. Sidious was never far from him. The evocation of the Sith Lord's presence here snapped him back instantly into the moment with total clarity. Reaching up through blindness, Maul took hold of the serpent, grappling with its fully extended length. Somewhere in the void, he could feel the rippling, leathery sinew of the staff looping around his neck, felt the hundreds of small muscles twisting and constricting over his windpipe, pinching off his airway like a living noose. The next few seconds would be crucial. He flexed, bent his head, and jerked it forward, but the thing would not release. It kept encircling him, looping round and round, defying every attempt to take hold of it. Maul willed himself to be absolutely still, a study in perfect rigidity, allowing the serpent, in its moment of fatal overconfidence, to draw tighter still, stretching itself until he sensed its head coming back around in front of him once more. Still, he waited. Above it all, he could smell his opponent's fetid stench, could feel the claws of his opponent raking his skin, twisting into his face, gouging for purchase. It shrieked at him, and this time, the cry was pure victory. What might even have been laughter. Starved, insane, a warrior with nothing to lose.
You are no warrior,
Maul thought.
You know nothing of the dark side.
The moment had come. He grasped the head of the amphistaff, seizing its blunt nose and fanged mouth. His fingers took hold of its distended upper part, twisting, wrenching, until he tore the serpent's head off its body with a moist and meaty pop. The results were instantaneous. With a twitching galvanic shudder, the snake loosened and fell slack, the coils already beginning to slide from his neck, and Maul allowed himself a single, unobstructed breath before finishing his work here. Somewhere in front of him, the attacker had already responded to the death of his weapon with a howl of cheated rage. Maul no longer heard it. Primal as it was still only emotion. A cry of weakness no more instructive or relevant than the pain he'd willed away moments earlier. He had no more use for it now than he ever did. He did, however, take advantage of his opponent's scream just long enough to reach into its open mouth, feeling the moist warmth of its breath on his hand as he retrieved his tooth, plucking it from the thing's gums. Holding the mouth agape, Maul crammed the serpent's severed head inside, then clamped the gray lips tight to keep the snake's head from falling out. He ripped three of the larger piercings from the thing's right arm and jammed them upward through the lips, bending them back into barbed hooks and fastening the mouth shut with the serpent's head still trapped inside. With his hands flattened against those lips, Maul could feel the head twitching around inside the mouth, sinking its fangs in reflexively, squirting out venom while his attacker jerked and spasmed and tried in vain to scream.
End it.
Still sightless, now holding his opponent at arm's length, Maul inclined his own head down. He thrust forward, driving his horns into the thing's sagging eyes, feeling them crushed to jelly against his scalp. The spasm stopped, and Maul stepped back, releasing the body, allowing it to collapse at his feet. He blinked and narrowed his own still-burning eyes, clutching his tooth in his hand. His vision was already starting to come back in murky shades of gunmetal gray and metallic blue. The process was infuriatingly slow, but it was happening. There was no reason not to assume that within a few hours he would be fully recovered, and when the floor began to shake. Maul whipped around, scanning the depths of his cell for the vibration source. From all around him, a ratcheting cacophony had taken hold of the cell. The sound of massive chains being dragged through the sprockets and pulleys of some vast piece of clockwork. It filled the entire chamber, rising to a deafening roar. Everything around him had begun to shift and tilt. Maul reached out, fingertips confirming what he'd already begun to suspect. The walls were closing in. This was no illusion, no side effect of crippled vision. The cell itself was literally changing shape. The individual steel plates that formed the walls and floors and ceiling all overlapping and sliding together like great mechanical scales, curving inward as the slant of its floor became steeper, transforming into a kind of bowl, opening in the middle to create a funnel. Reaching backward, Maul grabbed the handhold bolted into the bench behind him, clutching it for balance and holding on tight. All around him, the grating howl and shriek of metal got louder as a hole opened in the middle of the floor. He furrowed his brow, squinting down into it. His vision had become clear enough now that he could make out the lifeless corpse of his former attacker, the thing in its broken and now utterly useless organic armor, sliding downward toward the center of the cell. It sagged forward on a streaking smear of its own black blood, a slave to simple physics, its passage into oblivion followed in short order by the limp, decapitated body of the snake staff. Maul watched as warrior and staff both slipped through the hole and out of sight, into a bath of darkness almost as deep as the one from which he himself had just emerged. For an instant, was it real? He thought he saw something pale and eyeless reaching up to suck the bodies down. The hole closed again, and the floor shifted itself, smoothing out and becoming flat once more. The clanking and shaking stopped. The cell around him had resumed its previous rectilinear shape. Somewhere in front of him, a panel of red lights blinked and went green. He waited as the cell began to carry him upward. 2. Siddiqui. Stepping inside her office, Warden Siddiqui Blur flicked her gaze up at the bank of holoscreens that ran the length of the wall like a jury of accusatory eyes. A few of the screens were dedicated surveillance feeds, displaying different areas of the prison. The mess hall, the med bay, the worn of concourses, tunnels, and catwalks that branched like spokes off the vast open gallery area where inmates milled about before and after matches. The majority of the screens, however, represented incoming calls waiting for her. A queue of holonet conversations with bookies, bureaucrats, and the heads of various gambling combines, all no doubt in response to last night's bout.
Good morning, Warden.
The 3D4 admin droid announced cheerily as Siddiqui crossed the office.
And how are we feeling this morning?
Living the dream. She settled in behind the central console, where her morning coffee was already waiting. Leaning forward, she fingerprinted in the biometric code to bring up her morning schedule, watching the vivid swaths of data wash scrolling over the tablets in front of her. Pull up the holo vid of last night's match, would you?
Of course.
3D responded and turned its head to the row of waiting calls.
However, as you can imagine, we already have several representatives from the casinos and the gaming commission who are extremely interested in...
They can wait.
Perhaps I ought to remind you also of your morning meeting with...
Thanks for your input, Siddiqui said without glancing up. Is the holovid ready?
Certainly,
3D said crisply.
You wish for me to replay it from the beginning?
Would you mind terribly?
Not at all.
The admin droid had been working with her for 3 years, and its sheer obliviousness to her sarcasm was one of its most endearing traits. It chirped and swiveled, and its dedicated holoprojector fluttered to life, already making subtle adjustments to amplitude and phase modulations to enhance the image. Behind her desk, Siddiqui sat back, put her feet up, and took a sip of coffee, as the entire wall of her office filled with the footage of last night's fight. This would be the third time she'd watched it. She made it a habit to view every match at least twice, once live, as it was happening, and then later with a more analytical eye for the strengths and weaknesses of the individual fighters. What she'd discovered over hundreds of fights was that sometimes, upon repeated viewings, the fight itself would emerge like some third organism, something bigger than either of the combatants, a kind of composite presence knitted together of sweat, desperation, and perhaps unexpected elegance, with a personality all its own. Last night's former champion had been a particularly monstrous species that the prison's most sophisticated recognition algorithm hadn't been able to identify. 2 meters tall and cross-hatched with ritualistic scars, brandishing some kind of living staff and little else, the inmate had arrived here on Coghive 7 6 standard months earlier with a shipment of other convicts, 2 of whom it had already dispatched in transit. Since that time, the thing had defied all attempts at classification. It had screeched and chattered a language none of them recognized, and systematically slaughtered everything pitted against it. Some of the guards thought it was female. On the other side was the newly arrived inmate, a bold and muscular Zabrak, red-skinned, covered with black tattoos and a crown of 10 vestigial horns. Even now, after repeated viewings, Siddiqui couldn't take her eyes off him. In the final moments, when the challenger destroyed the amphistaff, literally ripping off its head and feeding it to his opponent, she'd felt a dark tremor of excitement that she hadn't experienced in ages. It was, she supposed, the same primal fascination that kept the gamblers across the galaxy betting millions of credits as they gathered to watch live holofeeds of the contests. When the fight was over, she froze the hollow on the face of the new champion, his red skin and yellow eyes glaring back at her. Gazing at it, she took a thoughtful sip of her coffee. "He took back his tooth," she said finally. 3D's head swiveled back toward her.
"I beg your pardon?"
"Our new champion. Before he killed his opponent, he took back his tooth."
"Perhaps it is customary for a species to..."
"What's his name?" she asked. "The new inmate."
"Prisoner 11240. I've already taken the liberty of uploading all relevant data onto your tablet."
Siddiqui punched the numbers into the console in front of her, watching her new champion's file scroll across the screen. It read, "Inmate 11240. Date of entry 01102211224. Name, Jagannath. Species, Zabrak. Gender, male. Height, 1.75 meters. Mass, 80 kilograms. Eyes, yellow. Skin, red. Prior occupation, mercenary. Charged with murder." "That's it?" Siddiqui stabbed the cursor down, but the screen was blank. "Where's the rest of it?"
"There is no more."
"Where did he come from? Can somebody at least tell me that?"
"He was apprehended on a routine sweep of the mining colonies on Subterral, where local authorities identified him from an outstanding murder charge. Initial lab cultures and blood work are still pending."
The droid clicked in word toward her, photoreceptors brightening.
"So far, he has eluded any more detailed classification. Would you like me to order a full psychiatric workup?"
Siddiqui considered before shaking her head. "No, not yet. For now, let's see how long he lasts. He wouldn't be the first big noise to come through here and pull a quick fade."
"Of course. If there's nothing else, I have Gaming Commissioner Chloris for you. And Eamon Hoang of the casino on Ando Prime. Whom would you like to speak to first?"
Chloris. Siddiqui found herself reaching up instinctively to check her reflection in the nearest screen, sweeping her fingers through her bangs. "Put him through."
"Very good."
The holovid switched over to a life-sized image of a silver-haired, distinguished-looking human in a double-faced worsted greatcoat that tapered smoothly down to his ankles. Dragomir Chloris was at least 60, but his olive-eyed, almost tropically tanned face appeared 20 years younger, even furrowed with the lines of impatience that he wore now. "Commissioner," Siddiqui said, raising her cup in mock salute. "You're looking dashing as always. One day, you'll have to tell me your secret for never aging a day. Is it dietary?"
"Yes," Chloris said dryly. "I've eliminated all gratuitous flattery from my diet."
That famous scowl deepened, drawing deep brackets along either side of his mouth.
"Now I trust that takes care of the pleasantries between us."
Siddiqui sipped coffee and nodded. "Apparently so."
"Good. You've kept me waiting quite long enough, Warden. And regardless of what you might have heard, the galaxy does not revolve around you."
"Sadly, no." Siddiqui smiled, eyebrows raised. "But there was a time, wasn't there? Cloris blinked.
I'm sure I don't know what you're talking about.
Of course not, she said, still smiling. Well, give me a moment to put on my penitent cap, and then you can tell me what I've done today to offend the delicate sensibilities of the Galactic Gaming Commission.
This isn't an occasion for levity, Warden. Exactly what sort of operation are you running out there?
Siddiqui's eyebrows spiked. My goodness, we are formal this morning. And then, folding her hands on her desk, all right. Well, as you know, Commissioner, Coghive 7 embodies a profitable gambling industry while providing a valuable service to millions of...
I think we can bypass the investment propaganda. I want to know about that new inmate from last night's bout. And I want to know exactly how many credits you won when he tore his opponent apart.
Me, personally?
Don't play coy with me. You'll discover that I have neither the time nor the temperament for it.
Oh dear. And I liked to think that I'd already discovered everything there was to know about you. Lowering her head, Siddiqui flashed him her best innocent look. I take it that your constituents weren't satisfied with the outcome of the match.
To say the least. And this morning you've got odds makers and casinos from every core planet yanking their hair out over this business. Frankly, I don't blame them. Your reigning champion, whatever that thing was favored by an outlandishly large advantage. He'd won 6 straight fights in a row. But that Zabrak beat him handily.
He beat the odds, Siddiqui said and shrugged. That's why they call it an upset.
May I remind you of how often that has happened recently in your facility?
Now hold on just a moment. Siddiqui sat forward. You're not implying that we enjoy an unfair advantage.
I never...
As you know, my brother and I determine the odds of every fight by a unique algorithm based on the fighting history, weight, criminal record, and all sorts of mitigating factors, the specifics of which are available to our millions of subscribers. Whether or not those individual elements add up a win, of course, is never a sure thing. She shrugged again. Which is why it's considered gambling.
Yet the house always wins.
As do millions of others. She looked at him carefully. It's a business, Commissioner.
An insanely profitable one.
Is that a question? Cloris cleared his throat.
Since its inception, there's no question that Coghive 7 has enjoyed an unprecedented popularity among the gambling community.
Good of you to say so.
But at this point, I'd remind you to be aware of the fact that there are an increasing number of casino owners, galactic bankers, and...
Cloris hesitated.
Particularly the small-time crime syndicates that control the gambling activity in the Outer Rim, all of whom have taken notice of how regularly you set the odds and then proceed to beat them.
Which syndicates are we talking about exactly? And isn't that sort of thing really outside your scope of influence?
You're not hearing me.
Oh, I think I am. You're worried about the Commission saving face among its IBC cronies and upholding your personal reputation for being tough on corruption and organized crime. All of which I respect. But I hardly think you need to threaten me with fines.
Fines!
Cloris leaned slightly forward, and his voice softened, becoming almost gentle.
Siddiqui, I'm going to stop you right there. I know your proclivity for unorthodox behavior, but out of respect for our shared history, I want you to consider this a friendly warning.
He paused, sighed like a man about to lift a particularly unwieldy weight, then gathered himself and continued.
If Coghive 7 is using insider information to place its own bets, then you, of all people, should know that the Gaming Commission is the last thing you need to worry about.
Meaning what, exactly? I'll have a mob of Black Sun Vigos showing up and throwing their weight around my prison? She gave a throaty chuckle. Respectfully, I'd like to see them try.
Not necessarily Black Sun.
Who then? Cloris cast an uneasy glance to the right at something off-screen that she couldn't see.
I've said enough. Goodbye, Siddiqui.
Wait a second, but his face was gone. Cloris had already cut off the transmission. Leaning back into her seat with a sigh, Siddiqui reached for her coffee, only to find that it had gone cold. Lovely. She glanced around the office for her droid.
3D, can you please heat this up for me and find out whom I'm supposed to placate next?
I think, a voice said from the doorway, that should probably be me.
Siddiqui glanced up at the tall, slender moon who seemed to have materialized without warning in the office's open hatchway. She saw with a certain resigned dismay that he was dressed in signatory palo fiduciary garb, a round-collared green tunic, form-fitting trousers and boots. The uniform told her all that she needed to know about who he was and in all likelihood why he'd come. With a cool smile, she rose from behind her desk.
I'm sorry, do we know each other?
Vesto Slipher, the moon said. Intergalactic Banking Clan. We've spoken before by hollow feed, but I've never had the pleasure of a face-to-face encounter.
Well,
she allowed the smile to retract just slightly into the corners of her mouth.
Always a pleasure to host an unexpected visit from the IBC.
Really?
Slipher's smile matched her own.
Your expression tells me otherwise.
Oh, don't take it personally. It's been that kind of morning.
Siddiqui glanced at 3D, then back at Slipher.
Are you on my schedule?
I tried to tell you.
The droid began to protest, but Slipher just smiled.
My dear,
the moon said with infinite civility,
I am your schedule.